Bhagavatam, and then the rest of the form of the Supreme Lord through sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam, gifting especially the holy name throughout, from beginning, middle, and end. So this verse is taken from, it's cited in Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha. There's a section which I'll make available to Leela Manjari so she can distribute to whoever has registered. So if you didn't register, please register, so you'll get a copy of this. And it's Anuchhed, or text 236. This is the final verse. I'll describe how he constructs that, and it'll be, at least for me, the window or the doorway to enter into the topic of surrender, because he discusses surrender in that section. And this is the final verse of that section. So this will be our beginning point. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Can we turn the light on just for the chanting of the verse? Because it might be easier to see the board if the light's on. Tapa trayena bihetasya gore. Santapya manasya bhavadvindradvanisha. Pashyami nanyach charanam tavangri. Dvandvata patrad amrita bhavarshat. Tapa trayena bihitasya gore. Santapya manasya bhavadvinadvanisha. Pashyami nanyach charanam tavangri. Dvandva patrad dvandvat tapatrad amrita bivarshat. Tapa. By the miseries. Trayena. Threefold. Abhihatasya. Of one who is overwhelmed. Kore, which is terrible. Santa prayamanasya, being tormented. Bhava, of material existence. Advani, in the path. Isha, O Lord. Pashyami, I see. None. Anyat. Other. Sharanam. Shelter. Tava. Your. Angri. Lotus feet. Dvandva. Of the two. Atapatrat. Then the umbrella. Amrita, of nectar. Abhivarshat, the shower. Translation: my dear Lord, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. Very poetic. Purport. Lord Krishna is speaking this, is being spoken to by Uddhava. Lord Krishna, recognizing Uddhava's highly intellectual nature, has repeatedly recommended to him that one should achieve perfection by cultivation of transcendental knowledge. But the Lord has clearly demonstrated that such knowledge must bring one to the point of loving devotional service to him, for otherwise it is useless. In this verse, Sri Uddhava corroborates Lord Krishna's statements that the actual happiness is obtained by surrendering to his lotus feet. When the incarnation of Godhead, Prithu Maharaj, was crowned, the demigod Vayu presented him with an umbrella that constantly sprayed fine particles of water. Usually umbrellas don't do that. The Lord's two lotus feet are similarly compared here to a wonderful umbrella that produces a constant shower of delicious nectar, the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Normally, speculative, analytical knowledge terminates in an impersonal conception of the absolute truth, but the so-called bliss of merging into impersonal spiritual existence can never be compared to the bliss of Krishna consciousness as stated here by Sri Uddhava. Krishna consciousness, thus, automatically constitutes perfect knowledge, since Lord Krishna is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. The words abhihatasya and abhivarshat are significant in this verse. Abhihatasya indicates one who is being defeated on all sides by the onslaught of material nature, whereas abhivarshat indicates a downpour of nectar that eliminates all of the problems of material existence. By our intelligence, we should look beyond the dull material body and nonsensical material mind to observe the unlimited shower of blissful nectar coming from the two lotus feet of Lord Krishna, that then our real good fortune will begin. Then our real good fortune will begin. This is a wonderful topic. This is a wonderful verse to introduce the topic. And I think I'll start by honoring Jiva Goswami and his indicating this verse as illustrative of the topic of surrender. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has used the word sharanagati, and in his commentary, Bhakti Sandarbha, he used sharanapati, same meaning essentially. What sharanagati means, going to the position of, or attaining the position of shelter, and sharanapati is shelter, manifesting shelter. So he begins the section and concludes the section, as is his style. He makes a statement and then he presents verses from the Bhagavatam that support the statement. It's his methodology. he declares his methodology in the beginning of the Sandarbhas. He makes a statement. The statement is that surrender can be or has two different elements, can be of two different types. One is, he says, making a declaration. From this day forward, we do this sometimes, I will just simply take full shelter of you. The other is, with the help of intelligence, dismissing other shelters. Because intelligence, the right kind of intelligence, buddhi, is intelligence that Krishna gives, and Krishna gives the intelligence how to come to him. Yena mam upiyanti te. We don't get that intelligence if we don't submit ourselves to Krishna. If we submit ourselves to Krishna, we get that intelligence. Because otherwise, it remains theoretical. We hear, but unless the heart is open and desirous to progress, again, the same theme of acceptance and progressing, I wish to progress. I wish to get closer to Krishna. That's our intention of this festival of the holy name, to get closer to the position of full shelter. So there has to be an intention and submission. Jiva Goswami goes on to describe these two, the statement. He uses that language. Make the statement. Sorry, the statement that's from your heart. I wish to get closer to Krishna. There's different degrees of that, and there's different clarity of what that means. But even whatever the conception is, making that submission, I wish to get closer to Krishna, whatever that means to each one of us. That's the beginning. Jiva Goswami goes on to say, according to Vaishnava Smriti, there is a description of six limbs of surrender, which the Sharanagati songs that we'll be entertaining today will be covering those six. So rather than repeating them all, he says one amongst the six is Angi, and the others are Angas. Angi precedes the Angas. Just like similar understanding is Krishna is the source of all avatars. So there's avatars, but there's one avatari. Krishna is the avatari who is the source of all avatars. Or there's 26 qualities of a devotee, our acharyas teach us, and one amongst them is the principal, and the others are marginal. Tatashta lakshana, the marginal. They follow behind the one, swarup lakshana. So like angi and angas. Not exactly the same, but similar. So that one is Krishna Eka Sharana. There it is. Sharana. Surrender. Krishna Eka Sharana. Not miscellaneous. And Krishna's, you know, very important. Then there's miscellaneous others. It's Krishna Eka Sharana. And with Krishna Eka Sharana, the other qualities of a devotee follow. Similarly, Jiva Goswami writes in this Bhakti Sandarbha section, the Angi, of which the others are Angas, is Krishna is my master. Krishna is my master. He says of the six, it's Goptritve Varanam. Goptritvevaranam is often translated as Krishna is my maintainer. So in a relationship of a master and servant, the servant is maintained by the master. The servant does service and the master maintains the servant. There's other dimensions of servant and master. Jiva Goswami says that's principle, swarup, essential. Then he goes on to say, then the others are to embellish that one, like accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable, etc. They're essential, but one is principal and the others are secondary. One is angi and the others are angas. So the principal one is submission. Mam ekam sharanam, just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. There's so many principles of Dharma. He quotes the verse, or he refers to the verse, Jiva Goswami. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam. That's the essence. The whole of the bhakti yoga process, from the beginning, intermediate, and advanced, the sadhana stage, the bhava stage, and the prema stage, it involves this essence of submission to the Supreme. Very similar, just symmetry here. In Brahma Samhita, when Lord Brahma is born on top of the lotus flower, from the stem of the lotus growing from the navel of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, he inquires, jigyasu, so many things. Who am I? Where did I come from? Etc. He searches and searches. By empiric method, he doesn't come to conclusion. He hears instruction to perform tapa. His tapa specifically is like ours, not by accident. It's chanting of mantra. And by chanting of mantra, he comes to realize his constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna. He goes further with his additional mantra and then understands his rasa, at least the beginning, according to Brahma Samhita. He gets an inkling of his rasa and continues, of course, become further advanced. So sadhana precedes prema. We're in the sadhana stage and we should progress towards the prema stage. Acceptance and progress. And the spirit, the foremost essence is this spirit of submission to the master. And the manifestation of Krishna that's most suitable for us is the name. Now, to help us access the name, Srimad Bhagavatam is there. It gives the whole panorama of all the subject matters, 10 essential subject matters. One amongst those 10 is the essence in ashraya. It's this ashraya means shelter. All other 9 topics of the Bhagavatam find their embellishing or expanding or giving further elucidation on the one. Ashraya. So our spirit to progress in the chanting of the holy name is taking shelter of the holy name. One of the things that's important in taking shelter of the holy name is understanding its importance. And beyond its importance is, beyond its importance and understanding its importance is the submission. But the intelligence or understanding the importance of the holy name helps us. It's not even essential, but it helps us come to that position. Like Rupa Goswami describes, knowledge may help one get a footing in the process of bhakti. So specifically in the purport, this whole section, this chapter 19, it's the compare and contrast of bhakti and gyan is over and over again and over and over again and over and over again in the Bhagavatam. Here it is, Krishna's final instructions to Uddhava. Again, over and over again, as the purport says. Uddhava is highly intellectual, the purport says, and he was. So, therefore, Krishna, in his relationship with Uddhava, is supporting that, because it's an endowment that Krishna has given him, intellectual capacity. To intellect means to discern or discriminate this from that. Pots and plates, in the language of our acharyas. This from that. So in the material and spiritual and varieties of spiritual and so forth. However, on its own, the best, the topmost thing that one can achieve through that intellectual discernment minus bhakti is recognition of Brahman feature of the Lord. The all-pervasive, qualityless, personalityless, featureless, eternal supreme. So really, and Uddhava's indicating, I got it, I understand the message. And that is, with discernment, this world is fraught with danger. We'll just go through the terms that's on the board here. There's a lot of them. It's kind of repetitious. Tapa means miseries. Abhihatasya, overwhelmed. Gore, terrible. Santapya manasya, being tormented. Bhava, material existence. It's like, you know, sledgehammer. It's not a nice place. And this is Uddhava. It's not, you know, an impious person that's being beat up by their bad karma. This is a highly intellectual person that understands the nature of the place. Miseries, overwhelmed, terrible, tormented. It's the nature of the place. Now, I'm going to refer to a verse where, well, let's go there. There's something here. The happiness of the material world that attracts people to go for it. My dear Lord, Master of the Universe, since I have directly seen you, my transcendental bliss has taken the shape of a great ocean. Being situated in that ocean, I now realize that all other so-called happiness would be like the water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. This verse is speaking of heavenly happiness. So, in this world, people that are religious, by and large, there's exception, by and large, they're wishing, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, they're wishing to follow their religion so they can increase their pious credits so they can enjoy in this lifetime and go to heaven after this lifetime. They get an upgrade. I work hard and I get to go to the good place. And largely that's, for religious people, that's the conception. So this verse is specifically addressing that conception. That conception of happiness in the heavenly planets is compared to the water in the hoofprint of a calf, compared to an ocean. And this is Brahman realization. Rupa Goswami takes the same metaphor and says the happiness of Brahman is compared to the water in the hoofprint of a calf, compared to an ocean of transcendental bliss that has waves and variety and variegated, unlimited happiness. So that happiness comes from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, exactly as found in this verse by Uddhava. Angri, Dvandava Angri, his two lotus feet. That happiness of his two lotus feet is the only refuge, the only place of shelter. Heavenly happiness is not Uddhava's aspiration. The Bhagavatam is not advising us, Bhagavad Gita is not advising us, one should not aspire for that. Because one who aspires for that buys misery. It's the nature of the place. It looks like happiness. What to speak of, you know, the happiness of the heavenly realm, even in this realm, people are pursuing what they think is happiness. It's fruitive activities. It's enjoyment that's seen as separate from the Supreme Lord. So to go, to progress further in approaching the goal of prema bhakti, we have to do our sadhana bhakti, where it's shelter not in the notion of getting relief from distress, although getting relief from distress is a natural byproduct of sadhana bhakti. According to Nectar of Devotion, or our first chapter of Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami teaches in this sadhana stage, very quickly, kleshagni, the inauspiciousness or misery, kleshas, the sufferings of material existence are mitigated. In the bhava state, they're not just mitigated, they're destroyed. Because there's no misery. There's no misery in the position of bhava and prema. That circumstances may be difficult. We've been discussing a little bit the prayers of Queen Kunti. She uses the word vipada, same as it's found elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, padam, yad vipadam natesham, step by step there's calamity. In preparing for this presentation, I was thinking, present in the room, I happen to know there's a number of devotees that are experiencing what might be called the vipada. Different degrees of it, you know, different stages of it, but something very troubling to the heart. And people that aren't here that I know that are tuning in, vipada. Now, Queen Kunti recognizes vipada has happened to her and the Pandavas. At the same time, she recognizes because of that, it increases the shelter-taking spirit of those that are undergoing that calamity. And because of that increased shelter-taking spirit and mood, there's reciprocation from Krishna. He shows his lotus feet. We're more interested, at least, in his lotus feet. And to the degree that we're interested in his lotus feet, Krishna reveals them. And the other one that's mentioned, kleshagni and shubha da. Shubha means auspicious. Shubha da means sadhana bhakti begins all auspiciousness. In the mature stage, it's completely gone. Now I want to make reference to, I like this topic a lot. And I like Srimad Bhagavatam a lot, so putting the two things together. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is found, according to Jiva Goswami, in the realization of Vyas. That means specifically, Vyas, seeing into the future, because he's Trikala Gyan, he was living during the life of Krishna, towards the end of Krishna's life, Kali Yuga would begin. He looked into the future and saw what Kali Yuga was like, and so he did something out of compassion. He took the sound vibration of the Vedas and put them in writing, including divided them and distilled down the Puranic portion of the Vedas to a smaller number of verses, and the essence of all of those 1 billion verses became 400,000. That's a big reduction. 1 billion to 400,000. But he was still feeling something's not right. Narada came and instructed him, fix your mind. You haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna. You've done a very good job indicating how people can be elevated through ritualistic performances to lift them from the modes of nature, help them become pious, prosper in so many ways in this life and after this life. You've done a very good job. But you haven't sufficiently described this direct glorification of the Supreme Lord. So, two, fix your mind in meditation on the personality of Godhead in full devotion to him. And two, that which you perceive or realize, write one literature that's just that, glorification of Krishna. So he followed the instruction of Narada. And the verses that describe his realization are very important. And if you read them carefully, one is describing the sadhana stage. Well, one describes the misery stage and why. That's the living entities are transcendental, but they misidentify themselves as product of the modes of nature, this body, and covered by ignorance, they suffer unnecessarily. That's the suffering part. Then he understood the mitigation part. Anarto pashyamam sakshat bhakti yoga madhoksajay. In that phrase, there's the word upashamana. Anartha, upashamana. Anartha means things unwanted. Things unwanted arise largely, especially the ones that don't go away easily, unwanted things that arise from offense. The source of unwanted things is offense. And upashamam means mitigates. Mitigate means diminishing. Like in law, someone does a crime, but there may be mitigating circumstances that reduce the penalty. It's convicted of a crime, but mitigating circumstances may reduce from a judge the severity of punishment according to the crime. That's a legal example of mitigating. So in this case, mitigating means reducing, diminishing. Diminishing the impurities of heart, the unwanted things in the heart. Anarto pashamam sakshat bhakti yogam adhoksajay. That's the sadhana. That's what we're doing. Sadhana bhakti. And part of the experience is it's kleshagni. The miseries are being mitigated. Thank you, Krishna. But the purpose of bhakti is not just mitigate the circumstances of misery. The purpose of bhakti is to be in our relationship with Krishna. This, the essence, the angi, the acceptance of Krishna as our master. And if we don't accept Krishna as a person, then it's impersonal. We may be chanting mechanically, or engaging our devotional service doing the behaviors of, getting the benefit of, but not getting the real, not progressing. So, at least an emphasis that I wish to make throughout is that the submission means there's a person, and the person on the other side is reciprocating to the degree that there's submission. There's distraction. We all know what distracted chanting is. The mouth is going and the mind is going. And they're not connected. We're not present with Krishna and His holy name. We're not calling Krishna. We're making the sound, but the heart is not open. The heart is covered and the mind is traveling. So now back to these two things that Jiva Goswami's commentary on the subject of Sharanapati or Sharanagati. There's two things. There are two approaches. They go well together. The first one is submission. The other is with the intelligent discriminating things that interfere with that. And actively weeding out the weeds and growing the creeper of bhakti, that submission unto Krishna. Both. Increasing the submission to a person. And the good news is Krishna reciprocates. It's not just our effort. If it's just our effort, we're still in this, actually it's atheism. Or at least impersonalism. It's certainly material consciousness. I'm the doer. A step beyond where we are to go further into the shelter taking is there is this relationship that actually that's what the heart hankers for. And that's what we should go for. Not just mechanically something. But from the heart. Big difference. Big difference. And that means that's the relationship and Krishna responds. The very next verse in Vyasa's realization is absolutely finishing material involvement. He says, Yasyam Vaishruyamanayam Krishne Paramapurushe. Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness, shokamoha and bhaya, and apaha, it extinguishes it. Completely uproots. Now, bhakti has the power to uproot if it's properly followed. If it's not properly followed, it's something like cooking your meal with the fire here and 6 feet high is the pot. It's going to take a while. Maybe eventually, you know, you'll boil the water or get warm enough you can cook the rice. But you have to bring the pot closer to the fire. We have to bring our attention closer to the lotus feet of Krishna, to the person. That closes the gap between where we are and where we want to be. And, you know, the difficulty is, well, we're not attached to the misery, but we're attached to the sources of misery. And so we stay in the position of misery, even when we're chanting, and we don't progress. Like the example of rowing the boat but leaving the anchor. You row, row, row your boat, but you don't go gently down the stream. You don't go anywhere. You're stuck. Or progress is very slow. The intelligence to remove the attachments follows from the submission. The angas follow the angi. accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable. It's one of the stages of, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's one of the stages of unsteady bhakti. There's two of them. Things that I know I should do, I don't do. Things that I know I shouldn't do, I continue to do. Why is that? Because intelligence isn't active. Even I know what to do, what not to do, I don't do. Because the spiritual strength isn't there. Spiritual strength isn't there because I'm still attached to the things that I shouldn't be doing and so forth. I'm not sufficiently active in the field of submission unto Krishna. That's the message here. So the prema stage is shoka, moha, bhaya. Those things are uprooted, apaha. Now we struggle. Maybe there's somebody here that doesn't struggle. But as far as I know, myself included, struggle is there. And what is it that we're struggling with? We're struggling with our false ego, and instead of our true sense of self, is this position of being Krishna's our shelter, and he's our master. Our position is just to be in his service. Period. Like Prahlad says in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, please don't ask me to take a benediction from you. Our relationship is the relationship of servant and master. Those of you from India, you know this term, vanik, merchant. You know, like a vaishya, same notion. He says that's not a relationship. That's not a business relationship. I do and you do for me. That's not a relationship. It's only one thing. You're the master, I'm the servant. That's it. So please don't ask me to ask something from you. Please don't do that. That's not our relationship. I mean, one takes that position and matures by sustained effort in that position. The prema stage gradually, the creeper of bhakti gradually matures, and the prema stage unfolds. That's what our acharyas describe, what Vyasa is saying. There's another very nice verse that's become of late one of my favorite verses. So it connects with this directly. Bhayam dutiya abhinivesha taksyat ishadapetasya viparyayo asmriti. Asmriti, the smriti and asmriti, remembrance and forgetfulness. So this forgetfulness comes from viparyayo, false ego. Misidentification. I think we've all had the experience. Even GPS sends us in wrong routes. But we ask somebody, which way is such and such, and they say it's that way, but it's actually that way. I had this experience not long ago. We're going to a home program, and somebody put in the address in the GPS, and it kept taking us around in a circle, saying, get to a certain place, turn left. There was no street by that name. So we, you know, kept going, and then said, you know, recalculating, took us around the block, and, you know, same place, turn left. There's no street. And it turns out there was something, you know, there's like a creek, and on the other side of the creek, there's such and such street. But, you know, the GPS got it wrong. We just kept following the wrong direction. We're never going to get to the destination. So we called the person and said, how do we get to your place? So we call Krishna and say, how do we get to your place? Here's how you get there. He's canvassing. He's sending his representatives. He's giving his teachings. He's giving it to Uddhava and giving it to Arjuna. He's inviting us, but we've got, you know, beans in our ears. We can't hear because we're attached to something else. So that attached to something else, it gives rise to bhaya. Bhayam dvitiya abhiniveshita. Abhiniveshita means obsessive attachment. Not just, you know, kind of I like, but we're attached. Abhiniveshita. And dvitiya, that which is seen as having value as separate from Krishna. Bhayam, fear arises. Bhayam syat, fear arises from that. Dvitiya abhiniveshita. We hold on. Even we hear, we hold on. Detachment is essential to progress in bhakti. But how are you going to get detachment? It comes from submission to Krishna. And the part of the submission, it's being described here by Uddhava. We recognize the place that we're in. It's not a friendly place. We try to make it nice. Prabhupada describes this in relation to Queen Kunti. There's calamities at every step. It's just the nature of the place. So materialists, people that are devoid of Krishna consciousness, they try to manage the calamities. They do, you know, clever, independently, you know, maneuvering, adjusting to make, you know, the kingdom without God as if it's the same as the kingdom with God. Rabindra Sarup Prabhu calls it our God project. We try to make the kingdom of God here in a place that's a place of misery. Uddhava is very intelligent. He understands it's not a place of enjoyment. Even that little bit of water that's in the hoofprint of a calf, it's nothing. There is something, and that's your two lotus feet. So, ishad apetasya. Apetasya is one who has turned away. So that the cure, same as in the sandarbhas, bhakti sandarbha, the cure is turn your attention to. But it's not just the behaviors, it's the person. It's the person. So now who's the person? We have this maha mantra, and through the maha mantra, we're getting the person. It's a sound. But because this is now our very basic teaching, Krishna and his name are none different. Abhinatvam nama namino. The name and the person are abhina. So when we're chanting Krishna's name, we're associating with Krishna. Now who is Krishna? There's a nice description found in Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam. Some of you, most of you know what that is. It's from the section from Mahabharata, Thousand Names of Vishnu. Krishna is in one of those names. Baladev gives the following commentary on the name. The syllable Krish means existence, and the syllable Na means bliss. The combination of these two is Krishna, the name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the meaning, and so the meaning indicates a person. The existence of all bliss. Sometimes the syllable Krish, I've heard this from Sanskrit scholars, Pridayananda Maharaj and Radhika Raman, both, because I consulted both to make sure I got it right. Krish means to attract. So we say, he's the all-attractive. So when we chant Krishna's name, Jiva Goswami makes this explanation, when the word Krishna is uttered in a mantra, the very moment the first syllable is vibrated, the sound attracts the attention of Lord Krishna himself. We become attracted to the all-attractive, and Krishna becomes attracted to the one who is chanting his name. It's not a solo program. It's not a doership program. It's not an impersonal program. It's a personal program. And to go beyond our present stage of chanting the holy name, it's essential, at least progressively, to understand the name is the person. This is the value. Our attention goes to that which we hold as valuable. The name is Krishna, most valuable thing. Because within Krishna is everything. And one who understands that takes shelter of Krishna. And so they then want Krishna as my only shelter. This phrase is going to come up in the Sharanagati songs. You'll see this again. Mamata. Jiva Goswami quotes this in this 236 text from Bhakti Sandarbha. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always within the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Mamata means, Krishna, I am yours. You're the master. I'm the servant, same as Prahlad. That's it. I am yours. You can do, same as Mahaprabhu, you can do with me whatever you like. You can embrace me, you can neglect me, you can trample me, you can do whatever you like. There's only one thing I ask. Please keep me engaged in your service. You're the master, I'm the servant. That applies for all rasas. Gopis down to, you know, anyone, the cows. You can do with me what you like. I'm your servant. And there's variety, all kinds of variety in the realm of rasa. But the essence built upon is, I am yours. And when one says that to Krishna, Krishna feels that to his devotee. This example, another example from Baladev, Vidyabhusan, in his commentary from Vishnu Sahasranam, is in this term of Krishna named Vasumana. Vasumana is, we'll go back to the picture. Vasumana is, one time Yudhisthira went in to pay his respects to Krishna, but he saw Krishna was in meditation. So he didn't want to disturb Krishna early in the morning. And his meditation went on for a long time. Finally, Krishna completed his meditation and came to external consciousness, and Yudhisthira paid his respects and said, what were you meditating on? And Krishna said, I was meditating on Bhishma. Vasu mana. Mana is mind, and vasu indicates Bhishma. And the statement in Baladev's commentary, Krishna said, greatly afflicted and lying on the bed of arrows, Bhishma Dev remembered me at the last stage of his life. Because of his remembrance of me, O best of men, I now always remember him. This is mamata, and from Krishna's side, mamata. There's something, we're the servant. And Krishna reciprocates, yayatam mam prapadyante, tangstataiva pajam yaham. He's equal to everyone if we submit to him in this, you, I am yours. This goptritve varnanam. You're the master, I'm the servant. When we're chanting, then Krishna reciprocates immediately. So think about it. Next time we have kirtan in the course of the day, and you're chanting and you're saying Krishna's name, and depending upon the sincerity that you're calling the person, Krishna's reciprocation is immediately. Krishna's immediately there anyway, because he's none different than his name. But you will feel the connection with Krishna depending upon your submission unto Krishna. I am yours. And we can experience that through the medium of kirtan or japa. or any form of Krishna's name. Jiva Goswami explains it this way. We're in this material world, and we stay in the material world because of offensiveness. It's even described in the Sandarbhas that the bhava stage sometimes doesn't come to the prema stage because of some previous offense. He gives the example of Bali Maharaj. And because of that previous offense, he fell from the bhava stage. So how do we go beyond that? What's the remedy? The remedy is this trinadapi sunichena. So in the Sharanagati songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it begins with dainya, humility, trinadapi sunichena. This humility, the humble mood, allows one to look inside. This is, you know, the guided by scripture, the intelligence can look inside and see where my heart is not right in my relationship with Krishna, and have the strength based upon that humility and submission to then address those things where our heart is not right. And then we can go beyond. That's this, it starts with, again, Jiva Goswami's statement, this submission, and then spiritual intelligence through the process of hearing and associating and guidance, how to eliminate the things that are impediments in our relationship with Krishna. Because if it's inside, it's going to come out. And that means, you know, impediments in our relationship with others and so forth. Again, referring to Queen Kunti and other great devotees, there may be some difficulty. There may be some vipada, calamity. It's the nature of the place. So the calamity doesn't indicate necessarily that your heart is dirty. In our case, it's commonly our heart is dirty. In the case of Kunti, it's an impetus to take further shelter of Krishna. So the misery becoming mitigated and the mercy becoming received is the message. So then we have to get to this stage of no false ego. My goodness, that's too much to ask. But bhakti has the power. Kapila Dev says to Devahuti, the power of bhakti can dissolve false ego. What's left if you don't have false ego? You have your relationship with Krishna only. Jiva Goswami refers to this phrase from Padma Purana, namaha. Literally means I leave aside false ego. If you leave aside, how do you do that without submission to Krishna? Ma represents ahankar, false ego, and na represents negation of ahankar. Thus, by uttering namaha, one negates one's independent attitude. We'll hear some more about this. The jiva is dependent on the Lord. He lives with dependence. Therefore, one should completely reject the idea of accomplishing by one's capacity, you know, practically anything, like becoming a better chanter, by our own capacity. It's the submission, the intelligence and strength given by Krishna, and then in the mood of service, you carry out what Krishna indicates. Nothing is left to be accomplished by the ability of the Lord. Consigning one's body to the Lord, one should serve him. Just like the four Kumaras did, by seeing the lotus feet of the Lord, they became totally fascinated. That's their shelter. And it's Uddhava's shelter. There's only one shelter, the lotus feet of the Lord. And when you have the lotus feet of the Lord, the attraction for happiness in this world becomes insignificant. The happiness of Brahman becomes insignificant. There is some happiness, Brahmananda, but as compared, Rupa Goswami compares it to insignificant. One can easily cross over it in favor of the ocean of happiness of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And this is our last one. This is Rupa Goswami in one of his very wonderful verses, glorifying the holy name, Namastakam, just beautiful poetry. But he describes the holy name as having lotus feet because the holy name is a person. So, O Harinam, the tips of the toes of your lotus feet are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance emanating from the string of gems known as the Upanishads, the crown jewels of all the Vedas. So the Vedas are jewel-like, and the crown jewel of all the Vedas is the Upanishads, and the Upanishads have a radiance, and the radiance of the Upanishad is worshipping the tips of the toes of the holy name. Very beautiful poetry. Srimad Bhagavatam, similarly, the chanting, beginning with the chanting of the holy name and all the other processes of devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name, carries one beyond material existence. But carrying beyond material existence is not just mitigation of suffering, it's obtaining the shelter of our eternal relationship with Krishna. It's the means of deliverance. You are eternally adored by liberated souls such as Narada and Shukadev. Now Shukadev, he was in the stage of Brahman realization. And he went beyond Brahman realization. He had zero interest in anything material. Total avidut. Zero interest in anything material. And he was experiencing the bliss of Brahman, and he left both for the shelter of the lotus feet of Ajita, the personality of Godhead, who is not fallen. And similarly, Narada, simply delivering the message of Krishna everywhere with total freedom because of his total shelter in the personality of Godhead. So these two transcendentalists, they have great attraction for the holy name. So let us similarly take shelter. So that's the theme of our weekend together. Sharanagati, taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna as the Supreme Person, the exclusive shelter for us. One last thing. In the verse on the board here, there's a word that means umbrella. That's ata patrat. Ata patrat, umbrella, is normally we carry an umbrella to keep the rain. So Uddhava is saying the umbrella of your lotus feet, it stops the rain of the miseries, but it also gives this shower inside. Nectar shower of sweetness and ecstasy. So simultaneously you're relieving us, your lotus feet, relieve one of the miseries of material existence and give the shower of nectar. I don't see any other place. The poetry of the Bhagavatam is wonderful. It clearly portrays what the benefit of shelter. So whatever the discriminating capacity we may have, it may help us to come to that position of shelter taking. If it doesn't come to the position of shelter taking and engaging in devotional service, useless. Exactly the language of the Bhagavatam. Shrama evi kevalam. Strong. Shrama evi kevalam. Useless. The benefit is it can bring us to the shelter. So let us see how, in the course of our time together, we can increase our shelter taking and get some spiritual strength so that those things that are our favorite distractions can be minimized. Hare Krishna. Any discussion or comments? Yes, Hemangi?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. It's more a practical question. Every ashram has its own challenges.
Every?
Ashram.
Every ashram.
Has
yes,
its
it
own
does.
Challenges. So yes. I'm very specifically referring to my ashram, Grihastha ashram.
Okay.
Like you were saying that when challenges are there, we have to take exclusive shelter of Krishna by avoiding taking shelter of other shelters.
Yes.
Sometimes when facing challenges, you do have this desire that I want to chant more and hear and read Bhagavatam more, but then there is a practical aspect because you have to play the role of a mother or a wife and as a community member, which kind of takes over, and you're not finding, even though there's the internal desire, but you're not finding that kind of time to spend qualitatively. Something that gives you strength. So in such a situation, what do you do? Because I do experience frustration sometimes.
No.
And because I really know what to do, but I'm unable to do because of the practical challenges. So well, in such a circumstance...
Keep it simple by saying, I know, you know, balance, just in short. The aspiration, if that aspiration remains within your heart, Krishna will make an arrangement. Maybe not that particular day over some period of time when there's a tsunami, this overwhelming circumstance that just takes you away from shelter of the hearing, the sound vibration. Now, even in those circumstances, there are ways that hearing can continue, maybe not to one's heart's satisfaction, but ashram specific or circumstance within one's ashram specific, the aspiration will come out in the form of some, you know, Krishna will help on his side and as well from our side. We'll find the time. It's something like what Prabhupada writes in Ishopanishad about time. The materialist says, I have no time, and in fact they have no time because they're being engaged by the external energy that keeps them fully engaged, so they have no time. They say, I don't have time. I can't come to the temple. I can't take this book. I can't read the book. I don't have time. I'm too busy. And they're too busy because they're engaged by the external energy. If the devotee, on the other hand, circumstantially, there's a heavy demand on based on the circumstance, then you maintain the desire, and as soon as the opportunity comes, again, you're back to the regulation of strong hearing and chanting. And it may require... Largely, it's the spiritual force. Krishna will help us. In some cases, not your case, of course, devotees may overextend themselves. And so in those cases, they may need to step back a little bit from commitments that are made. I mean, you do that periodically. You step back from, because you need to take care of the things you need to take care of. But you're enthusiastic to be in service, so you extend yourself. But the ballast is this strong desire and ensure that the strong desire is there. I could say for myself, different ashram, different circumstance, it's not mothering, but it's other kinds of services, including taking care of needs of disciples that really feel the need of some attention, and genuinely so. So each of us, personality-specific and ashram-specific, must find the time, because it's in the heart that we must find the time. And so there may be periods there's more, there may be periods that's, critical, and there's less. But the desire needs to be cultivated and sustained, and Krishna will make some arrangement. So from time to time, we take a little break, for example. Otherwise, it's a treadmill. However, my experience is, when you chant sincerely, Krishna hears, and he gives you more service. It's ever increasing.
I'm in a space where I'm afraid of that.
Then don't chant sincerely, and you.
That's not possible.
No. But then you use, many things happen. Your intelligence discriminates, and you invest time in things in a quality way rather than a quantity way. You follow? And that's part of the empowerment that Krishna gives. Look at what our founder Acharya did. He gave, quality time in a, consolidated manner with different individuals, and completely won their hearts. And their whole lives are just dedicated to his service thereafter. So the essence is the Krishna consciousness that we're carrying then enables us to give quality time without necessarily quantity time, and it's effective. And that's dependent upon the quality of your chanting. All right? Uma had her hand up. Can you pass the microphone over here? Put your hand up so he knows who to give it to. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So I heard that if we don't see Krishna as the person, we can be doing our various services, but we will not make progress.
Minimal. So, it's some progress. Some progress, but minimal.
Okay. My question was going to be that how do I know that I am seeing Krishna as a person, and can...
In your heart of hearts, you know the answer to that. The short answer is there's a mix. And we know from our own, self-awareness, are we chanting in a mechanical, or are we chanting in a from our heart manner? We know. And the experience is different depending upon whether it's mechanical or from the heart or mix. Distracted chanting and attentive chanting, we know the difference. And the reciprocation is there immediately.
Is this related to being impersonal?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, so there's, the process of getting rid of our impersonalism is, if I understand, is gradual, right?
Yes.
And that's why it's a mix. I just...
Yeah.
That's...
Yes.
Okay.
It's a mix of impersonal and strong material. And over there, there's this, I want to be in my relationship. I want relief of the distress, and I want this position of peace. And that's, in the beginning, that's largely the aspiration, exactly what Krishna says. At some point, we have to move the dial, or move the fulcrum, and recognize it's not just that. And then cultivate what it is. We just invest attentiveness to what bhakti really is. There's something there, and it needs to be cultivated. And, you know, and diminish the other one. But primarily by investing in being in our relationship with Krishna. And it unfolds. Everything follows from that one. The angas follow the angi. Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, in the back.
Maharaj, is there a difference between taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet as opposed to taking shelter of Krishna's holy name?
No. Next question.
Hare Krishna. My question is, you know, it said like, you know, in Queen Kundi's example that she's going through some adversity and that gives her that feeling where she can sincerely call out to Krishna.
Yeah.
So it makes me think that there is no way to the holy name without that kind of suffering. So I guess that's my question. Is there a path that's easy, or is it like difficult for everyone? You know what I mean? Like, is it a same degree of difficulty, or is it differ depending on the individual?
Yeah, it's different according to the individual. The nature of the place confirmed by Uddhava is it's miserable. Krishna says, and he's confirming. So it's not, you know, each of us have our own custom-made, you know, set of vipadas, calamities. But it's not punishment or God is cruel or something. It's just the nature of the place. And it's customized specifically to help us become detached from the temporary. You know, we have our favorite temporary. And Krishna doesn't necessarily go for the jugular the first time, but he'll, you know, take away some things and let's just see how they respond. And then, you know, but there's these two statements. Krishna never gives us a test that we cannot pass. And then there's another one. The spiritual master never gives to a disciple a service they cannot perform. That is, with the instruction comes the ability to carry out an instruction. Just like, you know, fix the mind on Krishna. We might say, well, can you give me another one? That's too difficult. But within the instruction to do so is the power to do so. So, great devotees, we can say, referring to a number of examples of great devotees, their calamities are such that we would never be able to survive. Prabhupada said that about himself, two of the disciples, in the early days. You would never have been able to survive what I went through. He wasn't bragging, he was just saying, it was very severe. And your capacity isn't that, so Krishna didn't put them through that. So, it's not cruelty, or it's not, you know, something. It's customized. Go ahead. Jai Jagannath.
In the English language, we hear the word submission used generally in a couple of ways. One way we hear it used is like an acquiescing, like, oh, I don't really want to do this, but it's good for me. Sort of submission. And then we use it also in the sense like one might submit a resume or you might give an account of something.
Mm, mm.
And in that second sense, we're giving it to a person we deem worthy for whatever reasons. I'm submitting my resume there.
Yeah.
So,
and we want something.
And we want something in return. I think also in our teaching we see its usage in both ways. I see that in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. My question is coming, I'm in a dilemma here. My dilemma is that oftentimes, at least in our family, we use the word submission kind of more in the first sense. It gives this sort of sense, at least, this emphasis. And we need to submit without there being like precondition of finding that person, Krishna, namely, worthy. In other words, we don't have the faith that warrants that level of submission.
Mm.
And yet we're told to submit without really yet having that level of faith. And so I'm wondering, what are the negative consequences of doing so? But then on the other side, I'm getting this image that I've heard from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, where he says, if you have to learn swimming, you have to get in the water. There's no other way to learn swimming. You can't learn outside of the water and then later on see what you learn. You have to learn in the water. So in that sense, it kind of, that sort of example gives viability to the use of submission in the first sense. Like, okay, I don't have the full confidence yet, but if I am to really gain from this, I have to submit. So that gives, but on the other side, I don't have enough trust in this person, Krishna, to warrant that level of submission that I'm being asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two sides of my question. What are the negative consequences of submitting without faith? That's the first side of the question. And the second side of the question is it necessary even if we don't have that much faith or we don't deem ourselves as having that much
faith? The second one you've already answered by Bhaktisiddhanta reference. But, you know, the first one, you know, supposing somebody's passing by a Harinam party. No submission. Is there benefit? Definitely. They may put the Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj described when he was living in London. He would pass by the Harinam every day because he had to go to work, and he would cross the other side of the street thinking, you know, something not positive. But that hearing had some effect. So without submission, it was having effect. Now, you know, going forward, are there negative consequences for submission when we don't have sufficient faith? Well, there, it's a little bit, I like, you know, physical therapy or yoga as examples. There has to be a little stretch, but not too much, because you can damage the body. When you're building the body, physical therapy or, you know, flexibility in yoga, you don't want to go too far, because you can end up in the hospital. So something with the negative consequences, you know, artificially too much. And then, you know, the bungee cord, it goes right back or further. But, you know, using Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's example of Utsaha Mayi, that's where we begin, commonly, artificially. Utsaha Mayi. We go too far. It's not, you know, so your question specifically, are there negative consequences? Well, it depends on our orientation of heart. I could recalibrate, oh, that's beyond my capacity, and just recalibrate. Or I could feel, you know, I've been let down. I surrendered, and Krishna didn't give me what I wanted, and so I'm going away. Or blaming another person, or, you know, something. So it depends on the orientation of heart. Is there a negative consequence? So, ideal isn't always real, but ideal is there's somebody who's trustworthy, who's guiding, and the trustworthy person has some sense of the capacity of the individual, and again, like Mikey's question, you know, they can calibrate, customize the recommended portion of surrender. Even if it's beyond, a little bit beyond your capacity, but, you know, sustainable. And, you know, with support, then sustainable. The ideal is there's guidance from a qualified person. Otherwise, it can be negative consequences if one's heart isn't properly oriented. And that, there's a lot of that, because people have been damaged in so many ways in the course of life. And, you know, something that even looks like one of those things, that damaged things, can send one into orbit. And then, you know, blame Krishna or blame the person or blame the something, not take ownership of their feelings. That's where it can have negative consequences. There's lots of damage in the lives of people. So therefore, proper guidance is most valuable. If you can get proper guidance, you're very fortunate. And stay situated carefully in that proper guidance position. Make steps that are sustainable. It's easy for me to say. I'm an avowed incrementalist. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, following him. Progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. But please make the steps. Don't just, you know, be complacent. Please make steps. Small steps, sustainable steps, and continue to make them in the right direction. So it has to be guidance what the right direction is. Somebody may be headed in the wrong direction, step by step. And that's a problem. And false ego gets in the way when you tap them on the shoulder and say, excuse me, but you're headed in the wrong direction. Get away from me. Or something. One last question, and then we're going to end. Yes.
So, recognizing our conditioned nature and how to move forward to that super highest conscious level.
Well, follow him. What does that mean? Well, I'm here and there's the standard. So let me be careful. It's just like, you know, somebody, is it okay to pray to Krishna? There's a difficulty. Krishna, help me with this difficulty. Sure. The answer to your question is in that whole seminar or the whole retreat, acceptance and progress. We have to accept our position and we act from our position, which is honest to our position, recognizing I want to make progress. So according to my position, nice verse, paraphrased from 11th canto Bhagavatam. A devotee may recognize, I have an attachment for something that's unwholesome. And I know that if I continue to act on this unwholesome thing, it's going to bring misery. Now, the acceptance part is, however, I recognize I'm attached to this something. And so, here I go. I'm going to act according to my honest position, knowing that it's going to bring misery, but all the while praying sincerely to Krishna that my heart simply become filled instead with the desire for your unalloyed devotional service. So we manage the unwholesome thing or the temporary thing or I want something other than your two lotus feet. It may not be unwholesome, it may be wholesome. I want some money so I can serve Krishna with doing this thing. Or whatever it might be. Now, a pure devotee, our founder Acharya, he found ways, but to have the resource, manpower and money to build the Hare Krishna movement. But his shelter was one thing. Like Krishna, if you so desire. And it wasn't just, you know, cute. It was Krishna, if you so desire. It wasn't cosmetic. He knew what Krishna's desire was, but, you know, placing Krishna's desire first to serve you. And if Krishna doesn't supply, that's just fine. If Krishna supplies, that's just fine. You know, health. In order to serve strongly, we need health. Krishna, if you so desire. Okay, to be continued. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.